All right, I don't know if you are anything like me, but as I have always had a fascination with miracles, there are different books that have come out of guys trying to tackle the subject. You know, we go through Acts, we hear about all these miraculous things going on, and how do we wrap our heads around that? C.S. Lewis put a book out on miracles. I read that. Eric Metaxas recently put a book on miracles, and I read that because I was fascinated, probably isn't strong enough. I mean, I was obsessed. And some of it, not just with the idea of it, I was obsessed that I just wanted to see a miracle. You ever been that place? God, just show me one just bona fide, undeniable miracle like we see here. I think for me, the thought was, as I struggle with these things of faith and my doubts, if I just saw that, if I just saw one of these miracles that would settle all my doubts and I would just walk with you in faith. You ever said something like that to God? You ever thought something like that? We're going to come up on a passage where God, through Paul, raises somebody from the dead. What do we do with these things? What do we do with these miracles? My hope this morning is that you will have a healthier view, a healthier perspective towards miracles, not like me and just this fascination. I mean, this started as a kid. I distinctly remember, this is one of those memories I have of sitting as a child, laying in my bed before I go to bed, just praying, God, if you're there, just show me something. Just turn the lights on. 3, 2, 1. Go now, go. And because I just so bad, if you would have done that, then I would just know, and then I would follow God because he showed up. Paul's about to raise somebody from the dead. You ever pray for a resurrection? I've done that before. I remember being at a hospital, staring at my brother, looking at his body, just saying, God, let him get up. Don't you do this kind of thing? If you would, man, imagine the impact it would have. But I think in so much of that, I had an unhealthy view and even a fascination with miracles. And I hope we can learn from this passage and learn from Paul and have a healthy view towards the miraculous. We open in your Bibles, if you have them, we're going to be in Acts 20. You can open up in a device, but as always, we'll put it on the screen as well. So we are picking up in Acts 20, and we'll be in the first verse. After the uproar ceased, Paul sent for the disciples, and after encouraging them, he said farewell and departed for Macedonia. When he had gone through those regions and had given them much encouragement, he came to Greece. There he spent 3 months, and when a plot was made against him by the Jews as he was about to set sail for Syria, he decided to return through Macedonia. Sopater, the Berean, son of Pyrrhus, accompanied him, and of the Thessalonians, Aristarchus and Secundus and Gaius of Derbe. And Timothy. And the Asians, Tychicus and Trophimus. I'm just waiting for the 1 week where all these dudes are named Frank and Jeff as I read it, but I get this. These, all of his companions, went on ahead and were waiting for him at Troas. But we sailed away from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread, and in the 5 days we came to them at Troas, where we stayed for 7 days. On the first day of the week, when we were gathered together to break bread, Paul talked with them, intending to depart on the next day, and he prolonged his speech until midnight. There were many lamps in the upper room where we were gathered, and a young man named Eutychus, sitting at the window, sank into a deep sleep as Paul talked still longer. And being overcome by sleep, he fell down from the third story and was taken up dead. But Paul went down and bent over him, and taking him in his arms, he said, "Do not be alarmed, for his life is in him." In this crazy story, this guy falling out the window, hopefully it's because I told you he was already raised from the dead. I hear some of you laughing at the guy falling out of the window to his death. It is a crazy story. I mean, of all the ways. And let me kind of fill in, and oddly enough, ironically enough, it is kind of funny, Eutychus means lucky. So lucky in a sermon falls out the window to his death. And again, so just to pick up, it says after the uproar ceased. Remember, he's in Ephesus, and there was the big riot that he caused, so he's kind of picking up right after that. After the riot, he kind of goes to take off. Just kind of a cool fact to fill you in on the broad story of the Bible. It's right here in verse 2 and 3. It says he went to Greece, and so at that time, Corinth would have been the capital of Greece. this, and he would have holed up kind of for the winter. Travel would have been hard during the winter months. So he's there for 3 months, and we know from his other letters, this here is right when the greatest theological dissertation that this world has ever seen is penned. So this is where he writes the book of Romans that we have in our Bibles. See, he's kind of wrapping up his missionary journeys. That's what's happening. He wants to go back to Jerusalem and then to Rome. He's kind of wrapping up this missionary adventure because he feels like the Greek world, they've heard about Christ, and he wants to move deeper into the Latin world, and so he writes to Rome. That could become a beachhead so he can allow the gospel to be propelled off to Spain and other places. That's some of what's going on. A couple other things to point out. I don't know if you saw it in verse 6. It picked up the we narrative. But we sailed away from Philippi. That wasn't always so. I mean, you'd have to be watching pretty close, but he would talk about Paul and his companions. So what does that tell you? So now at this point, Luke, the author, is traveling with them. So some of that, as we talk about these fantastic stories, that just gives us great confidence. I mean, Luke went and interviewed people. This is all firsthand accounts. But this here, Luke, the doctor, he's a doctor, saw this firsthand from himself, this story. That's always helpful, right? I mean, some of these fantastic stories, you know, you read in the Inquirer, it's, oh, my neighbor's dog saw Bigfoot in Japan. Oh, sure he did, buddy. But this is, he's saying, I saw this. We traveled to see these things. So kind of picking up again with the story, he goes, and one other neat thing to kind of point out, he talks about they met on the first day of the week. This is the earliest kind of unambiguous evidence of the church meeting on Sunday. So, you know, why do we meet on Sunday? They celebrated, you know, their service on Resurrection Sunday. So it's kind of cool that we see that there because that's what we're watching. We're watching a church service. They talk about breaking bread. There's communion, and Paul is giving a sermon. So you see in the sermon, I mean, Paul, it says, went and preached. And they would have assumed, you know, maybe people get back in from the fields, start at sundown for their meal. Paul preached until midnight. So I don't know. I mean, some of them were just guessing. What is he, 3 hours in? Part of it, Luke, is, you know, for poor Lucky sitting by the window showing this really isn't his fault, right? I mean, 3 hour sermon. He's kind of there, and it talks about when it also points out, you know, there's a lot of lamps in the room. So 3 hour sermon. It's kind of warm. You know, there's, you know, flames in the background. Falls out the window to his death. And Paul raises him from the dead. What can we learn from this? Again, just to try to think, what would that be like? You know, if I'm sitting here, Al dies right now in the middle of my sermon, I go down, raise him back up, come back up here. I mean, how crazy would this have been to be there at this moment for Paul to proclaim he's alive? Again, this is a doctor. It kind of sounded funny, you know, he was taken up as dead. But he's being clear that he's dead. This isn't like my first thought goes to one of my favorite movies of all time, The Princess Bride. He goes to Miracle Max. He's mostly dead. All dead, there's nothing to blaze. For you who have seen the movie. But he's saying he is dead and is alive. Imagine that. If that happened this morning. So how do we have a healthy view towards this? How do we put this all together? Because if you're anything like me, you read these stories, you hear stuff. I'm like, why don't I see that more? One, to have a healthy view towards miracles, we need to understand that they still happen. Do you believe that? Do we still believe that God is powerful, that miracles still happen, that God still moves in this world? I mean, with the power to raise the dead, God's power is still moving with us today. Do you believe that as you're sitting in the midst of whatever problems, struggles you have, that God can and does move, that miracles still happen, that prayers get answered? I mean, on some level, any just clear answer to prayer is a miracle. But it kind of, as we're diving into the story, we're kind of talking about these kind of fantastic miracles. Do you believe that? You know, the view of the culture of some people, even if they believe there's a God, it's kind of, he's the great clockmaker. He's made this beautiful clock. He winds it up, steps back, and doesn't touch it and allows it to run. I mean, most people, I mean, there are people that don't believe in any God, but as you look out at this world, I was coming in this morning at this beautiful sunrise. There's deer running across our field. I mean, you have to look at that and say, somebody, something's behind it. But is he still involved in this world? if you allow the predominant view of our culture that sadly has just creeping into the church, that we just be good people, but God has already set the clock and doesn't step in. God can and does intercede. Miracles can and do happen. Does it happen every time I pray? No. Does it happen sometimes? Yes. I mean, even the elders of this church, we've been re-energized of praying for people, praying for this church, praying for people, praying that people would get healed. Again, does it happen every time? No. But do we still hold on to the belief that God can move, that miracles are still possible? If you want to believe the God of the Bible, you have to believe that to be true. I love when God brings stuff together for me. As I've been preparing for this message, I was just looking through my Gmail, check that, you know, once, twice a day. And then I saw in like a little sidebar a message that I got that I haven't responded to from 2015. So it was, my wife left on that because she knows that type of stuff is true for me. So it was over there, and but the thing was, it wasn't an email. It was like a little Google chat, and I don't use that. I never bring it up. And it was a message from Surrender. See, Surrender, he was somebody that I went on a mission trip with India. I mean, he lives in India. We went over, and I got to spend a week with his dear brother, and it reminded me the story of his testimony. See, he was from a devout Hindu family. His sister dies. A pastor prays for his sister, raises her from the dead. If you're anything like me, there's a little bit of, really? Man, I wish I could have just been there to see it, just to know. I mean, do you feel that at all? Just that cynical, man, how come God doesn't move more? Why don't I see it? And I remember asking that. So in my ignorant American cynicism, I remember just kind of hearing these stories. We're traveling around and hearing this type of stuff happen. And I'm wrestling with it. I remember just asking them, I mean, is there a little temptation for people to kind of make these stories up? Like, doesn't it just sound cooler if you come into faith is, you know, from some cool miracle? Do you think people make that up? And I clearly, I think, offended him and confused him by the question. But I remember him asking this genuinely, and he just isn't even getting it. I mean, he's looking back at me, make it up. Why would I ever make that up? I'm coming from my context and forgetting his. When that happened in my family, he told me, we lost everything. My dad lost his job. He was with the government. We're outcasts in our village. Make it up. Why would there be any temptation to make it up? The only reason people tell that is because it's true. Is that true for you still? That you believe and so have faith that God answers prayers and answers prayers in mighty ways. It's got to start there. But on some level, I think most of us will kind of give mental assent to that, in which I want to spend kind of the rest of our times kind of wrestling with that. Okay, so how do we have a healthy perspective towards that? Here's where I want to go for the rest of our time. I want to talk about miraculous misconceptions, miraculous motivations, and missions. Because I think we have to wrestle with this as we read these stories. One, misconceptions. I had misconceptions towards miracles. You know what my misconception was? As I would sit in my bed and thinking, God, I need to see this. Can you just do this for me? And maybe it's just a prayer. God, I need you to answer this prayer. And I think that whole posture is wrong. If you feel like you need God to do something fantastic for you, or you need God to answer this prayer, Jesus, he addresses that posture directly. So that misconception, let me just share the words of Christ with you that are a great caution to me. This is Matthew 12. And some of the scribes and Pharisees answered him, saying, Teacher, we wish to see a sign from you. But he answered them, An evil and adulterous generation seeks for a sign. But no sign will be given to it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. That's a bit of a rebuke to me and most of my life because I'm just like them. God, show me a sign. Just prove yourself to me. I mean, just do something crazy. And Jesus says, that's not the posture we should have. I mean, that's exactly what the Pharisees wanted, and that's exactly what he rebuked. Now, let's put this in context. Does that mean Jesus did no miracles? Of course not. We read through the Gospels of his life. He did miracles left and right. Today, you go ask a Muslim who's the most miraculous person ever lived, that Muslim will tell you Jesus. It's undeniable all the miracles that he did. But it's when we have an unhealthy view and need for that, an unhealthy view, the need for God to do something to impress us, when God says, I don't do that. I don't play that game. Again, so God does miracles, but he says the only sign to be given, the sign of Jonah. He's like, I came, died, rose from the dead. That's the sign of Jonah he's talking about. My death and resurrection proves that. And again, he does miracles. He just doesn't want us to approach them in an unhealthy way or desire them in an unhealthy way. Because that's one of the lies that we believe. One of the misconceptions I had was if God would do this for me, then I would never doubt again. Have you ever really questioned that? Because guess what? That's not true. That if you would just see that thing that you long to see, if God would prove to you that would solve all your problems, it doesn't. Because we have loads of this that say otherwise. I mean, people saw Jesus' miracles all the time. Not everybody followed him. You can go back and read Matthew 28. This is a picture of the resurrected Jesus talking to his disciples. This blew me away. You know what it says? That here's Jesus after he was crucified, rose. Some worshiped him and some doubted. I mean, here they are staring at the Mac Daddy of all miracles, the greatest miracle ever performed, and like, nah, I don't know. I still struggle. I mean, I'm the point where I have seen what I would proclaim as a miraculous healing. I've been to people on mission trips where they said they had a dream we were coming. I've seen some of these fantastic things that still happen. And guess what? I can still struggle with doubt and still need to cling to this and cling to the cross. So some of it, you need to get that misconception that it's just going to solve all your problems. People can always rationalize stuff away. You can always, well, I don't know, maybe the doctors were wrong. Maybe this, but. You think, oh, if I get this one answer to prayer. You know, I'm sure none of you in this service, and you know, only first and second service people do this, but you ever bargain with God? God, if you just do this one thing for me, I'll follow you for the rest of my life. You just, you know, answer this prayer miraculously, I'll follow you for the rest of my life. You know the problem with that? If God answers that prayer today, last time I checked on the calendar, tomorrow's coming. And there's a whole other dose of problems. You need to get over that misconception that this answer to prayer, that seeing this will solve all your doubts. It just won't. It never has. It's not the silver bullet that you want it to be. So we need to understand that. We also need to understand what that would do to our relationship with God. Again, I want us to have a healthy view of this. So that means you pray for that and hope for that. Pray in faith that God does this. But how do you know when you're starting to get unhealthy with this? Do you demand it from God? God, you have to do this for me. Is it the point, and this I think all of us can be dangerously guilty of this, do you only come to God when you want something? You only pray to God when you need something. And here's that misconception that you need things from God as opposed to needing God. That's the misconception that you don't need God's gifts, you need the giver. You think that you need an answer to prayer, so you ask God. That's a misconception. You need God so you can go ahead and pray. That's when we get out of bounds, when you feel like you need God to do things for you and you're not pursuing Him, you're pursuing the gifts above the giver. That's when you get off. I mean, just think about that. When you don't realize when you're praying to God, what you're actually praying is, hey, God, can we just have this unhealthy setup and have an unhealthy relationship? I can prove that to you quickly. You ever have, most people do, have somebody in your life that only shows up, only comes around when they want something? Like, hey, I'm moving, what are you doing? You never hear from them otherwise until they need something, and all of a sudden you guys are buds, and they're showing up again. Do you enjoy that friendship? No. Do you think God enjoys that kind of relationship with us? That's all we want from Him is want stuff from Him and don't want a relationship with Him? Let me tell you about a buddy of mine growing up, Neil Rossetti. I don't know why anytime you talk about people from your background, you always use the first and last name as if it helps. Like, oh, I remember 10th grade, Frank Thompson. Like, oh, okay, no, no. But Neil Rossetti, we were friends growing up. Now, I use the term friendship loosely, because I distinctly remember I didn't particularly enjoy my time with him. There was a clear reason that me and Neil were friends. Neil had every single Ninja Turtle toy known to man. All of them. Not just the characters. I mean, he had the toys. He had the van with the pizza shooter out the top. I mean, I loved that thing. And so I'd go over all the time, and that's why we were friends. I mean, he had all the coolest toys. I didn't have that. We were more of like a hand-me-down kind of family. I didn't hope for a PlayStation for Christmas. I hoped my cousin would get a PlayStation so I can get his old Sega. That's a true story. I remember I got that Sega. I played Sonic for like 4 months. It was great. But I just wanted to hang out with him because he had all these kind of new cool toys. Call him up, hey Neil, man, I'm coming over. Why don't you get the Ninja Turtle set up? You can be Shredder. I'll be there in a minute. We didn't have a friendship. We didn't have a healthy relationship. Because I just wanted to hang out with him because of what he could give to me. Don't we do the same to God? Do you want a relationship with him, or do you want him to do stuff for you? That's a bit of a misconception where we get off, and I think part of the reason we see these wrong and have an unhealthy view toward it. You don't need a miracle. You need Jesus. You don't need to put your faith in answers to prayer. You need to put your faith in God. He's the only one that's going to save you. I got to minister to somebody this week. They were going through a hard time, and they were just saying, man, no matter how this thing plays out, I have a hard road ahead of me. I looked at it and like, you're right. So I'm going to pray for him, but I'm looking at it that even if God does some miraculous answer to prayer, you just need God to walk with you. We just sang your presence, Lord. Are you seeking that? Are you just seeking things from God? That's the big misconception. You think you need an answer to prayer, so you ask God. You need God, and that gives you the ability to pray to him. I think that's where we get off, and I think we misunderstand God's motivations for doing miracles. So that's misconceptions. Let's talk about motivations. So I think we misunderstand. And so, again, I'm not talking about every miracle ever. There's different reasons why God does miracles. There's different reasons why miracles don't get answered. I'm not addressing all those. God may not be answering your prayer because there's sin in your life. You're asking with the wrong motivation yourself. But I want you to know I'm not being exhaustive. I'm saying specifically here, there are clues in the text that tell us why he did this miracle. And the clue is how he goes about and does the miracle. You ever notice that in the Bible? It's kind of weird how there's different ways that miracles happen. Like somebody touches Jesus' cloak, you know, the one guy goes to wash in the pool. Sometimes it's just Jesus tells him. Like, it's just weird. It seems random. And I feel like, God, are you just messing with us? Like, is that just fun for you? Which shows why I'd be a bad Messiah, because that's totally what I would do if I had those powers. People come to me like, oh, I got leprosy in my right hand. I'm like, all right, here's what you got to do. Put your right hand in. Pull your right hand out. Put your right hand in, shake it all about. You're healed. I just made him do the hokey pokey. But I don't think God's messing with us like I would. There's intention. So the way he goes about this miracle tells us something, because you know what? It says he bent down over the child and prayed for him and raised the child from the dead. Did you know that this miracle in this exact same way is performed by two other people in the Old Testament? The prophet Elijah and Elisha do this same miracle. And so what the author's doing is hinting back to that, bringing us back to that so we can learn something from them. What do we learn when those prophets do that miracle? Let me take you to that scene in 1 Kings 17. This is the prophet Elijah. Then he stretched himself upon the child three times and cried to the Lord. O Lord my God, let this child's life come into him again. And the Lord listened to the voice of Elijah. And the life of the child came into him again, and he revived. And Elijah took the child, brought him down from the upper chamber into the house, and delivered him to his mother. And Elijah said, see, your son lives. Now catch this. Here's why this happened. And the woman said to Elijah, now I know that you are a man of God, and that the word of the Lord in your mouth is truth. Why did this miracle happen? It was to validate the message that the prophet had. So here is Paul, the mouthpiece of God in the New Testament, and you see these miracles to validate the message. That is God's concern here. So it says, you know, he wants to comfort them so they can believe and trust Paul's message, the message of the gospel, of the death, resurrection of Christ, the forgiveness of sins. There's a lot of messages out there. Why believe all of them? Well, Paul here is getting validated his message. Why? Just think about all your prayers right now. Now, that's God's motivation. God's priority is his message. What is your priority in most of your prayers? Most of them are for my comfort, if I'm being honest. You know, I'm praying for my life to get better. But God's motivation, God cares about your comfort. Don't get me wrong. But God isn't up in heaven like, oh man, Jared's square footage isn't near where it needs to be. I need to like miraculously have him hit the lottery so he can be. That's not God's motivation. God's top priority isn't to just make our lives more comfortable and even to show us a sign. God isn't insecurely sitting up in heaven like, oh man, they don't believe me. I need to do some more cool miracles so they believe me. God is secure in his power and who he is. He is motivated by his message, and that what gets us to mission. So we have misconceptions, we have motivation, and now missions. What do I mean by that? You know what the craziest part of this story is? It isn't the raising from the dead to me. It's the reaction to the raising of the dead that we haven't read yet. So I want you to notice how this plays out. I want to finish the last two verses for you. This is verse 11 and 12. So this is right after he raises from the dead. And when Paul had gone up and had broken bread and eaten, he conversed with them a long while until daybreak, and so departed, and they took the youth away alive and were not a little comforted. Notice what happened. Paul doesn't even stop his sermon. He raises somebody from the dead and then just starts preaching again. I mean, that is crazy. Imagine if that happened here. I raise somebody from the dead. We'd be flipping out. I'd be like, crank the music up. Somebody get me TMZ down here. You go get an ice cream cake from DQ. This is crazy. None of that. One of the commentators say it. The way Luke pictures this, it's almost like an annoying interruption to Paul's sermon. Paul's like, are you kidding me? He goes on raising from the dead. Like, everybody awake now? I'm not done. I got like 30 more points. And he goes on and preaches for another 5 hours. Paul is not impressed. Paul almost doesn't even care. I mean, of course he cares. I'm overstating. Like, I'm glad you got to see that. But I want you to see that so you know this is true. So that you know that you need to hear this. There's other people that need to hear this. Here's where me and Paul are different. Paul is not obsessed with seeing miraculous things happen. Paul is obsessed with the mission of God. Paul is obsessed with the message of Christ getting out to the world, and miracles may happen along the way. Are you in that place where you resonate that your neighbors, your coworkers don't know Christ? The reality is they live in darkness, that their lives are struggling, that people all around you are falling apart, and you can tell them about the peace that God brings. That's what keeps Paul up at night. You want to see God move? Then join where he's moving. You want to see God move? Then get on board with his mission. Because that is what concerns God. We want to see God just make us more comfortable and all that. And God says, I want my mission to go forward. And I'll do whatever it takes to make that happen. You think, oh, I don't know if I've ever seen like that. Let me ask you a follow-up question. When's the last time you shared the gospel that you told somebody who doesn't believe in Christ about Jesus? Because those are linked. This whole book of Acts is in the context of mission. That is God's motivation. You want to see God move? You find people that don't know Jesus and take the opportunity to tell them about him. Because God moves when we join his mission. Will you pray with me? Father, I don't hesitate to pray that you would move, to pray that you would answer prayers, to pray that you would do the miraculous. God, I want to see that happen, but God, I want to have a healthy view towards that. So God, right now, I pray that you would forgive us for all the times where we had poor motivation, that we were seeking the gifts above the giver. God, would you realign our hearts right now of trusting in who you are, that you died and rose from the dead, and not just seeking you to impress us to make our lives more comfortable, but seeing you move so others can know who you are. God, help us to be consumed with your mission and the message going out, and in that, I know we'll see you move. And so, God, right now, I want to take this opportunity, God, to respond to you. God, that we would not just hear from you, that we would turn and respond and worship to you now. Because you are worthy. You are the miraculous one. You are the powerful one. In Jesus' name, amen.